And hello and welcome to the DC Comics Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Jesus Heredia, and tonight we have a special guest. Special guest, do you want to announce yourself?
Yeah, sure. This is Dave Lucarelli, comic book writer, and happy to be here.
Awesome. It's great to have you, David. I know we've had you before on the show, so it's great to have you back. What have you been up to so far? I know you have a lot on your plate, but what's the latest venture that you want to promote here?
Well, yeah, I do have a few plates spinning, but since I was on your show the last time, the main book that I do is called The Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade, and I put out two volumes of that. It's kind of a coming-of-age gothic adventure, punk rock Buffy set in Scotland, if you will. And I put out two volumes of it, and I got invited to Glasgow Comic-Con as a guest in Scotland.
Ooh. So
I went to Glasgow. I had my first sold-out show. I gave a lecture about the Gorbals Vampire Incident, which is a real-life incident that inspired the comic. And I got to go to the graveyard and get a private tour of it where the incident took place.
How cool is that?
It was amazing. It was
and tell us what time of day was that?
Hopefully. Well, okay, the tour was during the day.
Oh, okay.
My friend and I went back at night because
You have to. Yeah.
And then I did further research, checking out underground tunnels and castles and ruins all throughout Scotland, all for volume three, which is the third and final volume in the trilogy called All Souls Day. And we are live on Kickstarter for the next 5 days right now. Happy to say we are 100% funded. So,
Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It's no longer a chance. Now it's a pre-order. So you can get All Souls Day or you can get all three volumes in the trilogy as part of the Kickstarter.
And so for those that want to look you up in Kickstarter, they would just type your name, David Blake.
Yeah, you could type David Lucarelli or you could type in Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade. I'm sure it'll be the first thing that comes up.
Yeah, awesome. All right, great. And so tell us, I wanted to ask you about this whole campaign. You know, what triggered it? What gave you the final green light? All right, I'm gonna do this. I'm going to jump in the water and do this. What inspired you to go through the Kickstarter phase?
Well, so I had done a Kickstarter for when I initially self-published the first four issues, and then they were collected by a publishing company called Creator's Edge Press out of Seattle. And then we did a Kickstarter campaign for volume two. So I already had kind of a background of running two successful campaigns. And, you know, I also thought, like, every time you do one, you want to, you know, hopefully raise a little bit more money, hopefully have a few more backers and expand your reach. I definitely been listening a lot to a couple different podcasts. There's a guy, Tyler James, who does Comics Launch podcast. Mm-hmm. There's another guy out there, Russell Nolte, who did a podcast called The Business of Art, and he's not still doing it, but it's all archived. And those guys really have turned the whole Kickstarter thing into kind of a science, or at least as much of a science as it can possibly be when you're selling art.
Right, right, yeah. And the response, I'm sure, has been amazing. I'm reading through your comments on the Brigade page, and, you know, it's great to see, you know, the people out there are supporting. And tell us, when you meet the actual readers at these conventions, give us that feeling of, wow, you know, they're out there.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. You know, I started exhibiting at WonderCon 5 years ago, and this year was my most successful con yet at WonderCon. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the faces that I saw are people that discovered what I did 5 years ago, and they come back to see me every year, and they say, "What do you got for me this year?"
you're becoming the Stan Lee of Artist Alley.
Yeah, something like that. So, but it's a good feeling, you know. I mean, the first time somebody buys a book from you, they're sort of taking a chance. They haven't read the book yet, but you know, they might like the concept. They might think the art is cool, and they think, okay, maybe this guy has something to offer. But the really cool thing is when they seek you out year after year. And they keep, you know, wanting to see what you have for them.
Right. And, you know, we would love to hear a little backstory on the Vampire Hunting Brigade. on how did you go through the, I'm sure the long process of finding an artist that could translate your words and story and characters and, you know, character development. How, give us that process when you were seeking out your artist for this, for these comics.
Yeah, so the artist of the Brigade series is Henry Ponciano. He's a Filipino artist. And originally, I had hired a different artist, and he illustrated about the first 17 pages of the very first issue of the Brigade, okay. And then he fell off the face of the earth.
It happens.
It happens, right?
Yeah, it happens, you know, yeah.
I had to find another artist, which was frustrating at the time. My tip for finding artists for any wannabe comic book writers, yeah, out there is Google classified ads and deviant art together. Okay. Because the classified ad section doesn't actually show up on the homepage of deviant art for whatever reason, mm-hmm, but there is a classified section. And if you find it and you put an ad there and you're willing to pay your artist, right, then you'll be surprised at the quality of artistic talent that's out there.
That's great. And I'm sure he's going to be working on the next one.
Well, this is the third and final volume in the Brigade trilogy, but okay, I definitely plan on continuing to work with them. You know, the other thing that we've got going is this year we had our first nationally distributed comic come out, which is called Tinseltown, and issue one came out from Alterna Comics. So that was very exciting
for me. Oh, that is so cool. Congratulations on another title, man. Look at you with your IPs.
Yeah.
So, that's great.
Thanks, man. Tinseltown is about one of the first female cops in Hollywood, so it's kind of like Boardwalk Empire meets L.A. Confidential.
Yes, but you have to share what's the special connection here.
Well, okay, my mother was a police officer for 20-plus years, so the book is also, wow, kind of my tribute to her as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And the response so far?
It's been great. You know, it's been selling well, well enough that the publisher's interested in doing a sequel to it.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it's been getting great reviews. It's been, we've been getting lots of fan letters and, uh-huh, stuff. So that we're going to have a letters column. Yeah. So I'm really pleased with the way that it's been received. A lot of people, seem to like it. I don't think it's Alterna's biggest selling title, but the people that read it,
yes,
and, you know, are fans of it really seem to love it.
Yeah, and I love the cover. I mean, it's just really, it just stands out. It pops.
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, the cover's great, and yeah, that's a combination of both Henry Ponciano's art and, mm-hmm, also some of the design work of Peter Cimetti, yeah, who is the head honcho of Alterna Comics.
I mean, you know how they say your comic is only as good as your cover. And just by looking at this first issue, it tells you all, okay, Hollywood, you got the camera, right, you got the spotlights in the back, and then you, yeah, got the police woman in the front cover. It tells you what it's about right away. That's your one sheet.
Yes, exactly. That, no, so they did a great job with that. And it catches people's eyes, and I'm very happy with how it turned out.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, now that we got when you selected your artist to adapt your comics, now seeking out distribution or publishing, which direction did you go? Did you have someone kind of mentor your way through, or was it just all Google? Or give us that process once you finish with the actual graphics and the lettering on the comic. What was your next step after that?
Well, so with the Brigade, you know, I was hoping to get distribution through Diamond. And for those that don't know, Diamond pretty much has a lock on comic book distribution in the United States. And I had talked to them a couple different times. I thought that it was going to happen, and it ended up not happening. So, what I was looking for with Tinseltown was I definitely wanted to find a company that had a proven track record of being distributed by Diamond.
Right.
And Alterna totally fills that that criteria. The other cool thing is that they print their books on newsprint, so the books are only $1.50 each, even though they're full size books in color. And they get distribution through newsstands as well.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, yeah. Which how many comic book companies can say that these days?
Yeah, that's where I picked up my first. It was a newsstand, and it was bent and, you know, ripped up. But I'm like, right. I want that comic.
Yeah, I'm old enough to remember when, you know, 95% of all comics looked like that.
Yeah.
It was a prestige format sort of thing. And, you know, they still publish – they'll publish the whole miniseries as a collection, and that'll be on nicer paper and a more prestige format. But yeah, I'm very, very happy with Alterna. And, you know, I think the one is kind of allowing me to kind of cross-promote the other because, you know, every time somebody on Twitter says, hey, I got Tinseltown and I loved it, then I say, oh, that's great. Why don't you check out this other comic we got going on Kickstarter?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. And the people that receive, you know, from the previous Kickstarter campaigns, once they receive their books or, you know, whatever achievement they purchased, what's the response from that once they get the final product in their hands?
You know, people seem to like it, and I think that that part of it is one of the signs of that is that we have a lot of repeat Kickstarter backers from mm-hmm. from the first two campaigns. But the cool thing with this is that if you're a repeat backer for the campaign, you can add on a custom designed slipcase so that you have, you know, you have a slipcase that will hold all three volumes. If you're new to the Brigade, each volume is a self-contained story, but it is part of an overall story arc in the trilogy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can also get all three volumes and the slipcase. And because we reached 100 backers, if you get the slipcase, either as an add-on or part of one of the backer levels, then you can also get what we're calling the Brigade Dossier, which is additional 16 pages of art from Henry Ponciano. I was looking through the archives, and you know, there's a lot of stuff that we've done. There are pages that maybe didn't end up in the book for whatever reason, for pacing. There's original art that's Brigade related that nobody's ever seen except Henry and me. So we want to get that out there too as kind of a special bonus to everybody.
Wow, that's I mean, come on. Whoever's listening, go now. Kickstarter, and just type in what should they type in? The Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade?
Yeah.
All Souls?
Type in that. All Souls Day.
Or type in David Lucarelli, and he'll pop up and give him some extra cash so he could give you some awesome graphic novel and extra treats depending on what level you buy in. So tell me what I haven't seen what the total backers are on the pledge side, but what's the most popular one?
I think the most popular level at this point is just for the graphic novel itself.
Okay, yeah.
Which is cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, Henry and I are both in total agreement. It's the best thing that we've ever done. You know, I realize for anybody that's new to the Brigade, I didn't really explain what the Gorbals Vampire Incident is, so I should probably do that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so in real life, in the 1950s, Scotland, hundreds of school kids went into a cemetery called the Southern Necropolis looking for a vampire, a 7-foot-tall vampire with iron teeth, in fact, that they thought had killed a couple of local children. And they went in there with steak knives and sticks and torches over the course of several nights. And at the time, it was considered mass hysteria. It was blamed on comic books. In our book, they found what they're looking for. They formed the Brigade, and then a half century later, there's a couple of juvenile delinquents named Gavin and Doug drinking in that graveyard on the night that the vampires come back.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
That is great. Now, you know, with the age of Marvel, as they are dominating the box office, comics translation to, you know, the multiverse or multi-digital platforms like translation to movies, TV. Have you been approached yet by anyone interested in the rights to translate this to the screen or small screen?
You know, I did actually have a producer come up to me at WonderCon after the
Eternal Comics
panel, and he wants to get together and meet with me. Nothing's come of it yet,
right?
But, you know, fingers crossed, maybe something will.
Hey, you never know. You never know. Now, let's see. What's the next con you will be at, just in case anybody wants to stop by and say hi?
Yeah, so let's see. In May, I'm doing a couple free Comic Day events. On Free Comic Book Day itself, I'm going to be
That is on May 5th, right?
May 5th, yeah. I'm going to be at
Cinco de Mayo, so you can get your drink and your comic.
That's right. Now, the Comic Bug actually celebrates on Saturday and Sunday. So Sunday, Ooh. May 6th, I'm going to be at the Culver City Comic Bug. Then there's a couple other cons coming up in May. I'm going to be at Fantasia Con.
Oh, where's that at?
That is in Indio, I want to say.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. And the cool thing about that one is we got invited as Alterna people. We got a free table. So
See?
Yeah. And then I'm also going to be doing Comic-Con Revolution in May in Ontario.
Okay.
That's a
busy slate there.
It's a busy slate. Yeah, and I haven't even talked about the third plate I've got spinning yet.
I think it's a great timing. Unless you want to wrap up the Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade?
All I'll say is, don't be afraid. Join the brigade.
Yes, and like I said, you got to check them out. The cover is amazing. It kind of reminds me like Buffy the Vampire Slayer ish. And I'm just saying just the cover, like the quality is really out there. So you have to definitely check it out. And of course the story is the backbone of everything. All right. So now what is the next thing you're working on? Tell us.
Okay. So the next thing I'm working on is something called Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror.
Nice. One more time. Tell us one more time.
Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror. And it's not actually a comic. It's a live show.
No way.
So, okay, 1950s, they used to put on, you know, before they did haunted houses for Halloween, they would put on a spooky, funny, scary magic show that would have hypnotism and mind reading and monsters and ghosts. And at the climax of every show, they would have what's called a blackout sequence, in which the audience is completely enveloped in total darkness and surrounded by supernatural phenomena. It's kind of a lost art. We went back. We found the original ghost show manuals from multiple sources from the 1950s. We figured out how they did what they did, and we added a few new modern tricks of our own, and we are bringing it back to Hollywood for 5 shows.
What?
Yes.
Where?
It's at the Flight Theater at the Complex Hollywood, and it's late night shows every Saturday in June, starting June 2nd, and then there's a Pay What You Can show Monday, June 18th at 10:45. So the way to find out about it is you just go to hollywoodfringe.org and type in Dr. Zomba or Ghost Show. It'll come right up. Tickets go on sale May 1st. And let me tell you, the really cool thing is one of the best known and best ghost shows from the 1950s was Dr. Silkini's Ghost Show. Okay. The people that own the rights to Dr. Silkini handpicked the guy that they wanted to become the new Dr. Silkini when they were going to bring the show back.
Okay.
Well, that didn't end up happening, but the guy that they handpicked to be the successor of one of the best ghost show hosts ever was named David M. Beach, and I'm happy to say that he is the star of our show.
Whoa. I want to go. I cannot wait.
Yeah.
May 1st. Okay, you heard that. May 1st, and where do they go?
So you go to the hollywoodfringe.org, and if you just Google Hollywood Fringe and Ghost Show, it'll come right up, and you can get tickets May 1st. The theater holds about 49 people. There's going to be 5 shows, so get your tickets early because they are going to go fast. And we're recommending, you know, it's probably for about ages 9 and up because, you know, it mostly played for laughs, but there is a blackout sequence. So if your kid is afraid of the dark, you know, parental advisory might be in place.
Get ready for those moms, Dave.
Yeah.
They'll be complaining. They're like, it was too dark.
Yeah.
Oh, that is great. That is great. Now, what brought this in? You know, were you one day like, hey, let's explore this. Like what brought this to the mindset?
Well, you know, I was always a monster kid, and I loved Halloween and haunted houses.
Oh, me too.
And horror TV show hosts and famous monsters of filmland and all that stuff. And one time I was at Comic-Con, I stumbled across this great book called Ghost Masters, which tells the whole history of the ghost shows. Unfortunately, that book is out of print. You can still find it and buy it online, but you have to pay a pretty penny these days. And I thought, man, I would love to see a ghost show. But nobody's really doing them, especially right. Not locally. So I thought, well, if I really want to see one, I guess I have to write it and
put
it.
That's great. That is great. And how long did it take you to write it?
You know, it's been an ongoing process, because once we found David, you know, we want to write the show to his strengths and his talents.
Yes.
The director of the show, by the way, is named Kevin Wetmore. He is the theater director for Loyola Marymount University.
Oh, nice.
And so I'll just talk about some of the other guys in the cast.
Yeah.
Kerr Lordigan is an actor friend of mine. He plays a character called Irgor, and he's kind of slumming it for us. I've seen him bring down the house to a standing ovation.
Nice.
Playing wild. And then we have Tamara Torres as Sirena. And we have Alessandro Martinez, who's actually a horror writer, but he's making his stage debut as Dracula. So,
ooh.
Here, I'll read you a little bit of,
oh, yeah.
of publicity here. This will give you an idea of what the ghost show is like.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Here we go. All attendees must sign a medical waiver. We are not legally responsible if the ghost show scares you to death. Fall under Dr. Zomba's hypnotic spell. You'll never be the same. Win a real dead body. See Sirena's sensual dance of the damned, banned in 47 countries. The mutilator thirsts for blood. Will it be yours? We make contact with the dead and unleash monsters from beyond the grave. With sex, violence, magic, and spooky mayhem, Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show of Terror.
Oh my gosh. And you know, the whole time I was just imagining like a big organ, like.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is great. So, only in LA, or are you going to take it on a little tour?
Well, we're starting off with these five shows. Our hope is that it is successful enough that we can start putting on more shows, like around some of the Halloween themes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've seen these other implementations during the Halloween, like the hayride in Hollywood. And,
sure, sure.
And then, of course, Universal, and there's some other little spots. But, dude, this could take off. Like, what would happen if this really took off?
Well, you know, I would be happy. That's
yeah.
What would
you would play Halloween every day.
That's right. That's
how
right.
Cool is that? It's like, honey, we need to buy more fangs, you know.
That's right. And we're stage blood. We're running
exactly.
Out.
We're running way low. That is awesome. Well, David, it was great talking to you. Again, you've already, I can wish you success on the Kickstarter, because you've already done that. So additional success to the pledges that are still piling in and getting a copy of your great comic book. Do you have any last words you want to pitch or tell people or remind them what to do after this?
Go to your local comic book store and ask for Tinseltown. Go to Kickstarter, look up the Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade, and log online to HollywoodFringe.org and type in Dr. Zomba's Ghost Show. Tickets go on sale May 1st.
Awesome. Now, I was going to ask you, is it also available digital, like all the other comics?
So, Tinseltown or The Brigade?
Let's start with Brigade.
Okay, yeah, The Brigade is available digitally through the Kickstarter. In fact, there's an all-digital package where you can get all three volumes. Tinseltown is available digitally, too, through Comixology.
Okay. And how does that work? Are you okay with that? That it's, you know, that it's not the hard copy, you know, the ones we grew up with.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it. Okay. You know, I buy some comics digitally, but, you know, I go back and forth. I don't have any room anymore.
That's the problem.
Right.
You should see my closets with all these comic book boxes.
Oh, I'm sure, man. Me too. You know, one other thing I should mention about Dr. Zomba is we are going to do a Kickstarter campaign for it, but we're only going to be raising $1. And the reason why we did that is we figure, you know, there's people that are into this kind of stuff that aren't in Los Angeles and can't go to the show,
right.
But maybe they want like a Dr. Zomba postcard or poster or T-shirt or signed copy of the script by the cast or, you know.
Yeah, a little memorabilia, yeah.
Even a DVD of the show.
Oh, so, yeah. I was going to ask you, are you going to record it at, you know, at least, you know, for later on or for publicity? Yeah.
We are going to be doing a DVD of the show that's going to be available through the Kickstarter.
Oh, cool.
You know, although I will say that especially the blackout sequence, to fully experience it, you probably have to be there in person. Because
you will
see and feel and hear things that you cannot explain.
Oh, my God. I could just imagine. And then especially you, Mr. Sound Guy.
Yes.
I can just imagine.
Yeah, you know, my day job is I'm a sound engineer at 20th Century Fox. And one of the things about that is there are certain frequencies that are low level, you know, that are known to instill fear in humans. So, of course, we were able to implement some of that.
Oh, man. See, I got goosebumps already.
Yes.
All right, David. Well, thank you again for joining us here on the DC Comics Talk. We didn't talk anything DC, which
we can talk some DC real quick. I don't want to do a whole podcast and not mention anything.
Sure.
Yeah.
Go ahead. What do you want to talk about? I'm open. Well,
okay. So I honestly watch a lot of those shows. You know, I'm a little behind, but my son and I love Flash.
Oh yeah, that's my favorite.
We're caught up on that.
Yeah.
I love to see Jay and Silent Bob.
Right? Yeah.
That was cool. By the way, Kevin Smith actually retweeted a post I did on Twitter about Tinseltown. You know.
No way. When was this?
So I was, you know, it was like right when I was promoting the first issue and stuff, just before it came out, and I sent him a tweet. I thought, you know,
you never know.
What do I have to lose?
Exactly.
And he said, "You did a comic that's a tribute to your mom. That's awesome. I hope you sell a ton of books." You know,
how cool is that? That is so awesome. You know, stuff like that you have to like frame because no one will believe you.
Exactly. So let's see. Okay, so what are the other shows? There's Legends of Tomorrow, which I'm real happy to see John Constantine is going to be a reoccurring character.
Yeah, he's going to be a reoccurring character now that they, you know, killed off Firestorm.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm a huge Constantine fan, I mean, from the comics and stuff, and I really feel like the series that they did with him, he was great in it. The series itself should have been a little bit more Breaking Bad and a little less like supernatural entity CSI of the week, but
I could see that.
Yeah.
Were you a fan of the movie Constantine?
No.
No one was. Oh my gosh. I have a story about on that one. I was invited to a test screening.
Yeah.
And so I had a little inkling of Constantine, but I wasn't really an avid reader of that title. And so, you know, we watched it, and then, of course, you know, we're at Warner Brothers in this little theater, and the lights come back up. All right, we're going to pass out cards, you know, the routine.
Yeah.
So then, okay, half of you stay, and I was in that part that stayed, and then they're just now talking general to the audience and asking questions, what worked, what didn't, what was a little confusing, if you want to just, you know, speak out. So people started raising their hands, and then I raised my hand, and I had a little issue with the ending. It was too melodramatic at the time, because the ending I saw was nothing. They obviously went to reshoot it. Now, I'm not saying I was the reason why they went back to reshoot it, but I was in film school at the time and I was interning, so that's how I kind of got involved in that little screener. And
I want to know what the ending is you saw.
The ending I saw was the twins as the little girls swinging in a park, And then just all of a sudden, they both start floating up into the sky and into the clouds, and then it fades to black. Kind of, you know, the reuniting of the twins. But it was really cheesy. It was like, what? So I said that. I said, you know, I'm sorry, but it was just really cheesy. And I'm in film school, and I would call that out in film school. It's really like cheesy, and I even heard some people laugh, and the guy goes, "So anybody agree?" And pretty much half the room raised your hands. Now, little be known, my friend that invited me to that screening, she was an executive for one of the producers, and she goes, "Dude, thank you so much for saying that, because this whole time we've been giving him notes," and it's, you know, Francis Lawrence, the director. We've been giving him notes, and he would not budge. And then Lauren Shuler Donner was like backing him up, and she wouldn't, you know, back down. And so finally, she was kind of like on our side. And seriously, that was the breaking point. If anyone complains about the ending, then I'll consider reshooting it. And then boom. And so little did I know, he was also in the back row with Lauren Shuler Donner. It was Francis Lawrence and Lorenzo Di Ballinvittura and a couple other producers that were right behind me. And I'm like, here I am, this film student, like, yeah, that was cheesy. I'm like, even in film school, I would call that out. And so can you imagine, like, a knife going in my back as I'm saying that?
Well, yeah, so you're the reason why the film wasn't even worse.
That's right, right. No, and the ending was still bad. I watched it and it was still bad.
Well, you know, I walked out on the preview that they showed at Comic-Con because I was offended.
yeah, it was just weird.
Anybody that knows the original character was created by Alan Moore.
Yes.
He was supposed to be a British ex-punk rocker, kind of a cross between a Philip Marlowe hard-boiled detective character and a black magician who was almost Faustian in nature. He was constantly making deals with the devil to save his soul that only got him in further, you know. And the classic Constantine storyline is when he sells his soul to the three entities that control hell, right? Which is Lucifer, Beelzebub, and the devil. And because they now all have equal claim on his soul, even though he's dying of lung cancer, they're forced to rip the lung cancer out of him and save his life. So hell doesn't go to war with itself.
Right.
Which is, you know, and in Constantine, the movie, he's not a middle-aged British.
No, you get Keanu Reeves.
He's an LAPD police detective played by Keanu Reeves.
With Shia LaBeouf as a sidekick. What's going on?
I mean, the only thing – there's one line that I liked in the movie that sort of felt true to the comics, which was when they talked about God's plan. Uh-huh. And they said, and the response was, God's plan? God doesn't have a plan. God is a kid with a magnifying glass and an ant farm.
Nice.
And I thought that was a good line. But that is a good line.
Yeah, that was probably the only good thing about that movie.
Yeah.
Thank God they didn't do any sequels, because I heard that they wanted to back in the day. But yeah. Let me ask you this. You were an avid viewer of Smallville, right?
I can't say I was.
Oh, wow. Okay. I found one.
But we can talk about other – I mean
– But you heard recently, or maybe you haven't, one of the big stars of that show, she was on there for like seven or eight seasons.
Yeah. Yes.
Allison Mack was recently arrested for sex trafficking at this NXIVM self-help cult that was kind of like sex trafficking, you know, these vulnerable women that they would bring in as a self-help organization, and instead they would flip them over and brand them.
Yes, I read all about that, and it was like some kind of weird, bizarre sex cult thing. And you know who else was involved in that too? Was Grace Park from Battlestar Galactica.
Oh no, I didn't hear about her. I thought you were going to say there was another actress that played Lana Lang, Kristen Keurig.
Yeah, there's all kinds. I mean, it's really weird, man. The whole thing is just
So let me tell you this, David. I've been telling Taylor ever since Obama left office and we got Trump. We got hit in the flashpoint. Pretty much everything's going. What the hell's going on? And I mean, one after another. You know, politically, environmentally, socially, shit has hit the fan. And I mean, watching these people, you know, people that, you know, you watch on a weekly basis, you know, just like you and your son with The Flash. Imagine The Flash is some crackhead, you know, master pin number two in Columbia.
The Flash is, you know, Charles Manson or something.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like, what's going on? See, back in the day, they didn't have like the Fonz flipping, you know, and, you know, going, like you said, the Manson style. But it's just really weird how the world is turning, and especially these actors that I say sometimes they're bored or they just need that extra help, and that it just takes that one person that sees that vulnerable spot and just sucks on them and, you know, infects this venom of brainwashing. And
well, you know, here's the thing. I work with a lot of actors in my day job and stuff, and you know, to a certain extent, being an actor is being kind of an empty vessel, right? You have to inhabit other characters. And exactly. I think there's a lot of people in Hollywood that reach a certain level of success and they have a certain degree of talent, but they're also very vulnerable for other people to prey on them because of the fact that there are lots of other equally talented, equally good-looking people in Hollywood that don't achieve their level of success.
Right.
And they are on some level aware of that, that they are very lucky. But when there are other people that come up and they say, hey, listen, I can tell you why it was you and not the other, you know, 100 people waiting in line behind you that achieved the success, and I can give you the golden keys to make sure you keep achieving it. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
yeah, it's just and then the branding, like, I don't know if you read the article, but I mean, these ladies were holding, you know, the ones getting branded for like half an hour, just chiseling in the initials of the guy and Allison Mack. And the creepy part is the girl that finally came out and, you know, accused him of these horrific events. She said that she was also one of the girls holding the other girl down, and then and then thinking, I'm next. And and the reporter's asking her, like, wouldn't you just run out of there? And she said, for that moment, I was just stuck. I felt like this was the only way.
Yeah. Now it's very twisted. On a lighter note,
right?
you know, the guy that's behind all the DC shows. Well, not all of them, but a lot of them.
Yes.
I think his name is Greg Berlanti, right? Is that correct?
Greg Berlanti. Yeah. Yes.
So he's a great guy, really nice guy. I got to work with him briefly on Love, Simon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That came out already, right?
Yeah, that came out. And I'm also a fan. I know it's not DC related, but I'm also a fan of Riverdale. I don't know if you're into that show at all.
Oh, no, but I heard really great things about that.
It's good. Yeah. It's well done. It's kind of the Archies done, you know, kind of noir Archies, if you will.
Okay. I got it. We're talking about – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say okay, people don't know our history, but we've known each other now for like forever and a day because our kids are friends and they went to the same preschool together.
Yes.
And so it just so happened that my son Calvin was with me at work that day that I was working on Love, Simon, that they had the actor who also plays Kid Flash come in.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, my son got his picture taken with Kid Flash.
That is so cool.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I love Kid Flash. He was a great addition to that. Since we're talking about The Flash, who is your favorite character? And you cannot pick The Flash.
I can't pick The Flash. Okay.
Cancels out.
Okay. I'm John... Who would be second best?
The long hair. Cisco.
Cisco, yeah.
Yes. You know, I kind of like Dr. What's his name? The one that messed up everything.
Oh, Professor. I know you. Yeah. What is his name? I'm John O'Blank.
I know, me too. Well, that guy. I liked the season one where he was kind of playing double sides, where he was actual, you know, the Reverse Flash, but also playing Professor Wells.
Yes. He's always, I mean, he's an interesting character because, you know, even now, like, you can never completely trust
him. Yeah, no, I have a one eye open on him. I'm like, any subtle movements, I'm watching.
Yeah.
Now, so, you know, Dave, since you're a comic book writer, I want to ask you this. What was your response when Joss Whedon came out and he says, "I have no story for Batgirl"?
You know, I don't know, because I have mixed feelings. I think Joss Whedon is an amazing writer.
Yeah.
And I also think that he doesn't always have the best concept of whether or not his stories are best suited for film or TV.
Right.
You know, because the Buffy movie is not that great, but the Buffy TV show was awesome.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And then, you know, if you look at Firefly, it didn't succeed as a TV series, and a lot of that wasn't his fault. It was the fact that they aired episodes out of order and in stupid ways. But you know, the movie I thought worked great as a movie. So I also Joss Whedon, I don't know if you read all the stuff about him with his ex-wife coming out
talking, accusing him
of having multiple affairs with various women and stuff. And, you know, so I can't help but think that has been a factor. You know, it's not good optics for the guy that's accused of that to be doing a major superhero, right.
Female
star protagonist being a female.
It would almost be like if they had Brett Ratner directing Batgirl, you know?
Right. But at the same time, I have to say that, obviously, you know, those without sin be the first to cast the stone.
Yes.
I don't know that he is a monster or a villain and should be painted with the same broad brush as, you know, certain individuals like what Bill Cosby appears to be or things like that.
Yeah.
And I think that he really is an amazingly talented guy. Mm-hmm. And it's always a tough thing when your heroes have feet of clay, but they are all human. And
yes.
Certainly, I think that there's an urge in this country to sort of tear down all of our idols and throw out the baby with the bathwater. When we do that, we sometimes lose a lot of good stuff and good people along the way.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And sometimes they get sucked in, you know, because of the bigger avalanche. You know, it's just Harvey. He. I think he was the pinnacle point where it just all came crumbling down.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not to trivialize the pain and the suffering that a lot of these women that have, you know, been truly abused by some of these people and power plays in Hollywood, and the things that they've done to them. I think it's terrible, and I think those people should absolutely have to pay for what they've done. I just don't know that. Joss deserves to be thrown away because of what he's done.
Right. Well, on a lighter note, Superman turned 80 this year.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did. And he doesn't look a day over 80. And
you know what about that? I'm really glad that they brought back his pants, because I thought he looked stupid without the red pants. Okay.
Really? Yeah. It just looks weird now with the red pants.
No, because to me, it looks like he's practically naked without them, okay? The reason why it's not underwear on the outside of your pants, it's based on the strong man's costume, yes, the circus period.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to me, that's what looks normal. I don't know. I'm a Batman guy, so.
Yeah. Well, Action Comics issue 1000 came out. Can you imagine ever having a title go all the way to 1000? Is this the first, or do you know of any other titles that have reached 1000?
I don't think so. I don't think there's been, you know, anything that's been that continuously, yeah, long
published. Yeah, even after breaks, you know, it still reached 1,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive when a title gets into the hundreds, for
right,
sure.
Right.
Walking Dead's got to be up there now, right? I mean, it's been around for quite some time.
I have no idea, yeah.
I mean, that's probably the longest going modern series, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah, that would make sense, yeah.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about Superman, give us your first introduction to Superman, if you could recall it.
My first introduction, it was probably the George Reeves show.
Yes.
Which I, you know, wasn't really, even as a kid, was not my favorite. I mean, compared to Batman.
Oh yeah.
Mostly because as a little kid, I want to see my superheroes in their outfits, you know, fighting, exactly. Right? And George Reeves would show up for maybe in the Superman outfit for like a minute in each episode. And
always towards the end.
Always towards the end. Hey, by the way, have you been to see the Batman 66 exhibit at the Hollywood Museum?
No, but I did see your photos.
You got to go.
I do. I definitely have to go.
It's been extended. It's really cool. It's definitely worth checking out if you're a fan of the Batman TV show. I know people think all the museums in Hollywood are tourist traps, but the Hollywood Museum on Highland, it doesn't look like much from the outside, but it's actually one of the two really cool legitimate museums in Hollywood.
Do they still have the Cheers bar there?
I don't think that. No, they don't. They have like a really cool underground, almost like a Chamber of Horrors where they've got like the set of Silence of the Lambs, like where Hannibal Lecter was, you know, kept in the asylum and stuff. Oh,
dude, since we're talking about horror now, I'm going to transition. Blumhouse has just released the trailer at CineCon in Las Vegas for the distributors there. And first reactions to the Halloween sequel, not reboot, it's a sequel to the original, to John Carpenter's first one. So it looks like they're erasing now the second one.
Right.
Remember with H2O, it was like supposedly be after Halloween 2?
Yeah.
And then, you know, 40 or 20 years being in between. So this one is not a reboot. It's not a remake. It's a sequel to the first one. Now, it has also John Carpenter as an EP on that. So he kind of gave them the blessings and got his name on there. But are you a Halloween fan, or did you get burned out with the Rob Zombie?
I saw the first Rob Zombie version of it. I thought it was pretty good. Here's my history with Halloween is it was probably the first movie that really traumatized me.
Oh, yeah. Scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. And the reason was I saw it when I was in second grade. My cousins had cable at their house.
Oh, my God.
They kind of lived a little farther out from the city.
Yeah.
And so I remember very vividly watching it with my cousin, and I could not sleep at all that night. No. I mean, I held her hand like the entire night, and she's a huge horror film fan to this day. You know, now I'm a horror writer.
Right. Now you're putting on shows.
Now I'm putting on spooky horrific shows.
Now you're going to transfer that fear to other kids.
That's right. I'm almost like the sex cult people. I shouldn't make light of that.
Not at all. let's just continue.
right. But that movie.
The breathing, dude. That even the sounds. The when he's trying to choke her in the kitchen. I'm like, oh my God. Or the breathing in the car where the girl touches the front shield and it's kind of musky.
I would never let my son see that movie until he's much older.
Oh, no. I would say at least 18. I mean, come on. At least.
Maybe 34. We'll see.
Now, you know, that's a great question. We both have the same age boy. And, you know, seriously, let's think about it. For a movie that we obviously enjoy and, you know, we know they will at a certain age, what age would that be for you?
You know, it's hard to say.
It is. Because, you know,
movies, there's movies that like I'm kind of on the fence with now.
Yeah.
Where like I know he's a little too young to see one, but I still really want to show it to him. Like, how long do I have to wait? You know?
Like what was the recent one on that?
Well, I want to show him like The War Years.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally get you. You know, and I would love to show like, you know, Escape from New York. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he has to go save the president. You know, how cool is that?
Right. Or The Road Warrior.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah. Mad Max and all them. Come on.
I can't wait till we get to that point.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I think we got probably another 2-3 years.
But. Yeah, we do. Yeah. They're a little too young. Let's have them enjoy childhood.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
I will say one thing about Superman's anniversary.
Yes.
The very first day that Calvin went to Canyon School. They asked him what his name was, and he said, "I'm Superman."
Nice.
And I heard that story, and I said, "Yes, you are, son. Yes, you are.
Oh, that is great. That is great. You know, it's in all of us. So you know, that boy in blue, he's there. He's there for representing all of us. So that's great. All right, David, thank you again. This has been a pleasure. We should do this again. If you're free once in a while, it'll be great to catch up with you. Do you want to give a shout out as we wrap up the show?
Shout out to all the people that have backed the Children's Vampire Hunting Brigade on Kickstarter. From the bottom of my heart, it means the world to me that you guys are believing in one of my dreams, and I can't wait to share it with you.
Awesome. All right. Well, there you go. This wraps up our show of DC Comics Talk with our special guest, Dave Lucarelli, right?
Lucarelli.
Okay, Lucarelli. David Lucarelli, comic book artist and also showman, should I say?
You should say writer.
Writer. Oh, yeah. Did I say artist? I'm sorry.
You did.
Okay. Comic book. Well, you're our artist, you know? You're creating these universes.
But it's a bit of a stretch.
I know. All right. Great. Thanks again. And have a good night, dude.
All right. You too. Take care, bud.
All right. Bye.